Blog Talk Radio.
Up, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend, along with my returning co-host, Macaulay Matthew. I'm, of course, William Ramo.
Welcome back.
What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, man. What's up? I'm glad to be back. How's it going?
I'm glad to have you, even though, you know, my friend Jamal Chapman, he did an awesome job last week, but, you know, it's great to have you back, man. How's everything?
I appreciate that. Jamal did a good job, so I got to commend Jamal on taking my spot last week. But I'm doing good. Just a little sore throat. But, you know, I'm glad to be back co-hosting this show with you.
Thanks for being on.
Definitely.
And, yeah, let's, you know, lead off the show, talk Subway Series. I'm also going to get into the Juris Familia trade, since that coincides with the Subway Series. Also going to talk about the Cespedes injury. Obviously, that's tied in with the Subway Series as well. The NBA trades, big stars in the NBA trading places, like similar to Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd in that 80s movie. But
yep.
We'll get into that. Also going to talk about the MLB, you know, All-Star game. And, of course, you know, we're going to end the show with our Extreme Rules review and, of course, the World Cup winner as well. So if you guys would like to talk about any of these topics or more, feel free to call in. That's 917-388-4189. That's 917-388-4189. So feel free to talk about any of these topics and more. Without further ado, you know, the top story right now is Juris Familia. He got traded to the Oakland A's, and as a Mets fan, I'm gonna really miss that guy, because he's been one of our best closers that we've had. I'd say he's been the best closer that the Met has had since Billy Wagner in 06.
Wow, you better than Mejia?
Yeah, I would say he's better than Mejia. I mean, Mejia
wow.
was good, but yeah, I'd say Familia is better than Mejia. I'd say Mejia is right behind him. You know, I mean, Familia was third all time in saves after Benitez, you know, a guy who he's been compared to after his 2015 appearance in the World Series, and of course John Franco. But you know, I'm sad to see him go. You know, he was, you know, that guy. You know, he always played with his heart and soul. You know, putting on that orange and blue. You know, he spent his entire career with the Mets. He was drafted, I think, 16 years old. You know, from the Dominican Republic. So even before he got traded last night after yesterday's game, which the Mets won, final score 7-5, if my memory serves me right, because it's been a blur. Syndergaard, he pitched well. Syndergaard, he pitched well in that game. You know, he kind of ran out of gas in the fifth inning. You know, a little bit, you know, the balls, you know, Rosario didn't really play that well on the field that game yesterday. But Mets was able to hold on to dear life for that victory, and Syndergaard got his first victory against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. So, you know, congratulations to him. And along the way, he became the quickest pitcher in Mets history to 500. He surpassed Dwight Gooden, a.k.a. Dr. K, you know, by 8 innings to become the all-time, the quickest pitcher to 500 as a Mets. So congratulations to him. As you know, there's trade rumors going along. You know, I think he struck out Neil Walker, if my memory serves me right. But I could be wrong. But, you know, he pitched well. The bullpen, they didn't really pitch that well, but, you know, they were able to hold on to the lead. And you knew that Familia was going to get traded because, you know, I was watching the game, you know, with my father. And, you know, we noticed that in the eighth, you know, they had Tim Peterson, a minor league guy who rarely pitched. And you have Jerry Blevins, who is the anti-lefty specialist, because every time he goes into the game, he just gives up home runs, you know, unlike how he was with the Mets last year. You know, he was lights out last year. But, you know, when you see Jerry Blevins get into the game, you know the other team's going to add more runs on the board. So with seeing Familia not even warming up to potentially come into the game, you knew there was something up. You know, the rumors was that there was like 7 or 8 teams after him, you know, after Familia. So you're thinking, Mets might get a good prospects, you know, some major league ready players, you know, for a guy who's been one of the best closers in the game. Yeah, he's had his worst year as a Met closer so far, you know, this year. Well, I shouldn't say so far. I mean, because this is a bookend of his career, barring Mets re-signing him in the offseason, which I strongly doubt Mets are going to spend the money because, you know, Mets tend to spend the money on star players, with the exception of Cespedes. But, yeah, it's, you know, Mets was able to hold on. Jesselman pitched 2 innings to close out the game to save to stop the Yankee, you know, from, you know, scoring. They had 14 hits, but they left. I think the Yankees was 2 for 13 with runners in scoring position. So, all in all, the Mets were able to hold on to that victory by the skins of their teeth. And once you knew that happened, then the rumors of Familia was going to get traded happen. And before the Yankee game, you know, was officially announced that he did in fact get traded to the A's. And, you know, basically what they got was a minor leaguer who's ranked 11th, you know, in, the A's farm system. I think it's 11th or 17th. I would have to double check. I think his name was Toffee. I think Toffee was the other guy, the third base guy. So, yeah, basically they got Bobby Wall, who's a right-handed pitcher. You know, he was, you know, one of their best relievers in the minor leagues. He's currently in AAA, but he's ranked like I think like 17th overall in their system. And then on the minor leagues, they got this guy in single A called William Toffee, which this guy apparently coming out of college, he was compared to Matt Carpenter. Oh, unfortunately, in the minor leagues, he has a .244 batting average. So he definitely hasn't adjusted to the minor league. So I'm thinking, but importantly also, the Mets got a lot of money that they're going to save that they could use it for the international bonus money, which Mets, you know, they never get any guys of value in the independent, you know, I mean, other than, you know, obviously the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, but when it comes to Japan, you know, they never get those guys, unless if it's Kazmatsui.
Yeah.
You know,
well, this is a good start for the Mets. I mean, they in order for the Mets to get better, they need to get younger, they need to get prospects, and you know, this was a good trade for the Mets. You know, they got some guys back from the A's, and hopefully now they could trade some other guys before the deadline, and try to rebuild. You know, that's all they could hope for now going forward.
I understand the guys have put the guys have potential. The AAA guy, the AAA, you know, he has potential. You know, the other guy, I mean, he's down in the system. I mean, he's not raking in single A, so that concerns me a lot. But you know, the rumors that there has 7 or 8 teams going after him. And they should be able to get a better deal than this. This guy, you know, was the heart and soul of their bullpen. You know what I mean? Obviously, he meant more to the Mets in his tenure than the value that the A's gave up for him. I mean, I felt like they could do better, but then again, I'm not one of the three GMs that they have: Rico, Manaya, and the other name is escaping me right now. Ricciardi. So,
right.
I mean, I'm disappointed that this trade had to go down. I'm even more disappointed that the Mets are, you know, they're just like, I don't know, like at least 16 games, you know, behind the National, I mean the Phillies, I should say, and they're never gonna reach 500 for the rest of the year. And then you top it off, yesterday's game, they finally got a win. You know, Conforto snapped out of his huge slump, his season-long slump. Cespedes finally comes back, hits a lucky home run thanks to Yankee Stadium down that 316 foul pole. They get the victory. And then right after the game, you're wiping the sweat off your brow because, we escaped Yankee Stadium with a victory. You know, and then Cespedes says that basically he does. Not only does he have a hip problem, he also have a heel problem, where basically he's gonna have to do surgery, which is gonna make him be gone for like 8 to 10 months. So
wow.
I'm thinking like, why did he come back? Why did he come back? Why didn't he just do the surgery already? Like. You know,
yeah.
Why didn't he do the surgery? And then he'd even play today's game, which was a waste of time. And he's DHing. It's not like he has to. He'd even run at the home plate when they scored. I think it was the seventh run, yesterday's game, and he could have got tagged out if they had a perfect throw.
Man,
if he's not gonna. I mean, he's a buck, man. I'm sorry, continue.
No, sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say that, you know, if he knew that he had this injury, you know, for weeks now, he shouldn't have come back. I mean, you should have just had the surgery already, and then, you know, you come back healthy next season, but now it's going to delay things even more. I don't get Cespedes. Cespedes is a weird dude, man. He's very strange.
You're telling me? You're telling me like I was the poster child of the Yoenis Cespedes fan club from Jump Street, like since 2015. But come on, man, ever since he got that contract, like everybody was saying, he's been dogging it. Come on, like why did he come back? He'd even DH in this game. Like he should just hang it up, get the surgery, and we'll see you in 2019, if possible,
yeah.
Or 2020. You know, I'm just done. Do the surgery. I don't want to see him. I don't want to see him in the Met uniform until he gets fully healed. Because this is a joke, man. I mean, we're already a laughing stock in the league already, sharing the back page with the Yankees as the laughing stock of the league. We're supposed to have this team that start off 11-1, have all this potential with the starting pitching, and we can never give the Grom a break to score some runs. So I and I'm an optimist. So it looks like tomorrow, barring a miracle, DeGrom is not going to get any run support, and it's just going to be Jacob DeGrom versus the New York Yankees in that ballpark. You know,
yeah.
So the only thing that the Mets have is the pitching, starting pitching. But as the experts are saying, let's trade off all the let's trade off the only strength of the Mets so we can get prospects back. But look what the prospects the Mets got back for Familia. I mean, come on. Like I don't trust the Mets right now. I'm sorry. They have to sign Machado in the offseason and actually get a reliable closer at the minimum, even if that means re-signing Familia.
Well,
I'm just done. And then, of course,
you mentioned that
they lost to the Yankees.
Before you go into the win today, you mentioned the Mets need a closer. Well, Mejia, it looks like he's going to be reinstated, and he might be coming back to the Mets. So he could probably be the Mets closer again by next season or maybe even later this season. Who knows?
No. You cannot trust this guy as a closer. As good as he was back in the day, a few years ago, you can't trust this guy. This guy, he got suspended two times in 8 days once he got reinstated. You can't trust this guy back. Is he going to be a reliever? Yeah, sure. He could come back once he's able to, since he's reinstated, he could start warming up again. But to trust him as your closer, you can't trust this guy. As much of success as he's had, how do you know he's going to get suspended again? But then again, on this team, what do you have in this year? If he was able to be reinstated, I would say fine, go ahead, you know, because this is a lost season, you know. So if he was theoretically able to come back, I would say fine, try him out. This is anyway, after the Mets went 11-1, we're spring percent. So they might as well call up Peter Alonso, try to play, you know, try to see what we have for 2019 because. Playing these veterans, I mean, other than Bautista, he's been playing well, you know. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And they're just playing these guys so they could trade them, which is what it is. So, you know, what can I say? And then you top it off, the Yankees, you know, they got the victory. No surprise. You know, the reincarnated Carl Pavano, a.k.a. Sonny, I forgot his name right now, Sonny Gray. We should have won that game. If we would have at least held on to the lead, we should have won this game, man. But the Mets didn't have any timely hitting, and then they gave up those insurance runs in the 7th and 8th, and that's what killed us. Because Chapman, as kind of as he 500, get this W. And Mets are like, nah, fam, we don't need this win. You guys can win and go and win 150 games this year. And what did we do? He walks. I think Reyes with the bases loaded. He hits Nimmo with the bases loaded, and the bases were still loaded. Tying run at the plate. What happens? Plawecki hits into I think it was Mesoraco, right? Mesoraco hit into the double play. And once that happened, I knew it was done. I mean, I envisioned that's what was going to happen because I've seen so many times that the Mets are getting blown out. They get to the tying run at third base, and they could never get that run home. It's just so frustrating, and especially with the Yankees. It happens, like, all the time. There was a game like that, I think in 03, with Raul Gonzalez. Same scenario. They beat up on Mariano Rivera in a non-safe situation, and they couldn't tie the game up.
Yeah, Chapman didn't have command today, you know, and the Mets did take advantage, you know, they did load the bases, but once Shreve came in, you know, they couldn't tie the game or
Man.
Take the lead, you know, which was frustrating, but, you know, hey, Yankees win.
Mets didn't take no advantage of nothing. Yankees gave them those runs. They literally gave them those runs. But Mets wasn't going to score nothing if Chapman didn't walk Reyes and hit what's his name Nimmo with the pitch. It's a joke, man. This offense is a joke. Like I'm just done, man. I'm done.
And who's that player in the outfield today for the Mets? I mean, he was horrible.
Oh my gosh! Oh my goodness, Dan Decker, man. I totally forgot about that until you mentioned it. Like, he had three misplayed balls in that inning. I think what was it, the fourth inning? I mean, to his credit, all those balls were hit hard. But dude, you couldn't even catch one of those balls. Like, to his credit, all those balls were hard hit. Hard hit balls. The diving ball, the diving play, this dude wanted to be in Sports Center, but he's gonna end up on Sports Nation with those blunders or whatever. But all those plays were tough plays. But come on, man, the dude can't hit. The dude couldn't hit out of a this dude couldn't hit through a wet paper bag, and he was there for his glove, and he just might as well just left his glove and his bat at home because he didn't do anything today.
Yeah, he's not good today at all.
But then again, we weren't expecting this guy to be, you know, All-Star anyway. So what can you do? And then you got Cespedes. He doesn't even come into the game with the opportunity. You know, they better just, like, make him do the trade, right? I mean, not trade, like, do the surgery because it's a waste of time. Like,
yeah,
you know,
as possible.
This would have been the perfect time when Mazzarocco was coming to the game, that when he bounces a double play. That would have been the perfect time for him to come in just to swing the bat. Swing the bat, man.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to run to first. You're going to run it out anyway. Like, swing the bat. I'm just done with this team this year, man. I'm like, I don't even know. This might be the last time I'm talking about them unless they trade somebody by next week. You know, before the trading deadline. But, yeah, moving on, Yankees won. You know, they were able to hold on to that victory, and they won. And then, of course, Tuesday night, you know, the National League lost to the American League Yankees because basically, you know, Yankees are on
American League Yankees.
You know, it's like watching a Subway Series game. The American League team will always win. Like, back in the days, you know, the Jackie Robinson, you know, days of the 40s and the 50s, the 60s, 70s, the National League, you know, whooped the American League behind. But recently, ever since the Derek Jeter era, the American League has been playing a lot better. And as a matter of fact, they won the last six, you know, All-Star games in order to not only tie the all-time series with 43 apiece, but thanks to the 8-6 final in the 12th in Washington, the American League now has the all time record of 44-43 with two ties. So, you know, DeGrom, he was pitching well. He gave up the home run to Trout, you know, and then he struck out the next person afterwards, you know. But, you know, Severino, he pitched well. Judge hit a home run. He became the first Yankee since Jeter to have a hit. But, of course, you know, Judge had a home run, just like he did, I think, today. So,
all
you know.
Rise.
Yep. He all rise. You might as well not even rise. You might as well just stand up the whole game because, you know, he's going to hit a home run. So, and he did. And tomorrow, DeGrom's by himself, and he's going to try to win this game by himself. Hopefully, the Mets will play some defense and actually, you know, swing the bat a bit. But we'll see what happens, you know, the final game of the Subway Series, and hopefully Mets will win that game by some miracle, and they could finally win a series because they haven't won a series in, like, 16 tries. So they've either – and they've either split a series or in most cases they lose or even get swept. So hopefully Mets can actually win a series. And for them, that will be their World Series because Mets fans don't have anything to be happy about. But, moving on to the NBA, big news. DeMar DeRozan, you know, the star of the Raptors, the best star player they had since Vince Sanity, he got traded to the Spurs for Kawhi Leonard. And here's my thinking of it. Kawhi Leonard, he's a great player. I mean, he has a lot of issues with the Spurs, as evident as last year and in this offseason. But to me, I think this was a dumb trade for Toronto because, one, you trade away your star player, a guy who bleeds, you know, Raptors, you know, that purple uniform, man. You know, this guy wanted to be a Raptor. The GM, you know, Ujiri, he told them that he was going to stay. And, you know, I'm saying there was a miscommunication, you know, that he had with DeRozan, because DeRozan thought he wasn't going to get traded. And they traded for, who's made it known that he wants to get. So this is just a rental player for 1 year, and you give up your star player, and he's going to, you know, at the trading deadline or there's going to be all these other star players, Durant and Butler, Kemba Walker, you know, the list goes on and on. The only reason this would make sense for me, if I was a Raptor fan or the Raptor GM, even though, you know, the Raptor GM has had a good reputation of doing good moves, the only way this would make sense is if you would keep DeRozan, you keep Lowry, which they did, and then you try to find a way to get Kawhi Leonard, and then you'd have a three-headed monster instead of two. You still have two, but now you have a guy who's just there for that 1 year, and he's going to leave. So what's your thoughts on this whole trade?
I don't think it makes sense because, you know, I agree with what you said. They get Kawhi, and Kawhi's probably not going to stay in Toronto, you know, for after this season. After this upcoming season, he's probably going to go to L.A. maybe, you know, or somewhere else. And for Toronto to, you know, trade DeRozan like that, who is like the face of the franchise, I mean, it's a complete backstab, you know, to him. And, you know, fire him next season. Anytime I play against the Raptors, if I'm DeRozan, I'd be scoring like 50, 60 points against them as revenge. But I think it was a bad trade, man. Yeah, I don't agree with it.
Dude, you know that's gonna happen straight up. You know every time he's gonna face them, he's just gonna whoop their behind.
Oh yeah, of course.
They're gonna cheer for him. They're gonna cheer for DeRozan. But once he starts scoring that 50 points on them, they're going to start booing him for sure. That's a done deal. Like, for real. That's such a dumb trade. Like, why would you give up your biggest strength for a potential weakness? You know? Yeah. Come on. Like, they should have found a way to try to get him to come. And then, you know, and then you would have had three star players to work with.
I agree.
So with this East, you know, with the exception of the Celtics and the 76ers, like, they could have made a little noise in the playoffs.
I agree.
You know, but it is what it is. I mean, hey, I guess it works out for the Knicks. You know, they don't have to worry about three superstars instead of losing, you know, and maybe have a chance of winning a game against the Raptors this year. Who knows?
Yeah. Hey, we have a Knox, and he's looking good in the summer league so far. So there's hope.
Yeah, that's true. He's been surprising people, you know.
Yeah.
With his play, and Robinson too, the center, who didn't play in college ball at all, or professional ball, period. You know, he's been surprising people. So, you know, look out for those guys. You know, hopefully they can live up to the potential. And Kevin Knox, you know, he's 18 years old. He can grow, you know, just like Porzingis. Porzingis is, what, 22? If he gets healthy, whenever he comes back, you know, he could, you know, he might be growing too. So
Yeah.
You know, if they can live up to the potential and they're looking at developing, they could have something there. But
yeah, great potential, you know, something to build upon.
Absolutely. And going back quickly on the baseball quickly, you know, the Dodgers, they acquired Manny Machado, who I briefly mentioned. You know, congratulations to the Dodgers, you know. You know, they always try to win, even though it hasn't happened for them since 88. But, you know, they got a superstar player. And, you know, what's your thoughts on it?
You know, I thought the Yankees were a strong favorite to get him. But looks like that's not the case. But, you know, I think he's going to do well for the Dodgers. You know, Dodgers, you know, by adding him, they're, again, a World Series contender. And, you know, they need all the offense they can get. But, you know, they're already a good team, but now they're slightly better now with Machado. But I think it's going to work out. This trade works out for both organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think so. You know, it's worth the risk, you know, with Machado. They're trying to win it all. See what happens, you know. Most likely going to be a free agent and sign with the Yankees, but, you know, you got to take that risk. You know, they're a win-now team, so we'll see what happens. Speaking of win-now, let's talk about Extreme Rules before we talk about the World Cup. So on Extreme Rules, you know, Andrade Cien Almas, he defeated Sin Cara. There's no surprise there. Sanity, Eric Young, Alexander Wolf, and Killian Dane, they defeat New Day, which is, you know, of course, Big E, Kofi, and Xavier Woods in a table match. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, you know, Sanity should win that match because, you know, they're trying to get over. Even though Eric Young, he's a veteran, he's a former TNA champion. You know, they're trying to prove themselves in the WWE, but it makes sense. I think I might have picked New Day to win because, you know, WWE, they don't tend to go with common sense and just do what they want to do. So I think I might have picked New Day, even though I wanted to see Sanity win, you know, since they needed it. So that's what happened. Then B-Team, this is probably the surprise of the night. B-Team, both Dallas and Curtis Axel, they defeat Broken Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt for the tag team titles. A nice win. What do you think?
Yeah, I was shocked by that. You know, I wasn't expecting them to win, but you know, yes, they're getting a major push now. You know, but I think it's nice for a change to see, you know, a new team, you know, get a chance at the tag team titles. I don't think they're going to hold on to the titles for too long, but it's nice to see. Nice to see.
Oh, yeah. I think the title is all right, man. The title is going to change on Monday night when they get that rematch. You know, I think they should have held the rematch till SummerSlam. Give the guys a little time to hold on to the title and then have them lose at SummerSlam. That's what I would have done if I was booking it, but obviously, I'm not a booker, so.
You should be.
Then, yeah, I should be. You know, WWE give me the money. You know, I'll help with the ratings, but I think they're comfortable doing their skits and stuff. So, but with that case, then you have Finn Balor defeat Baron Corbin. I mean, who really cares about this match? I mean, but you know, it is what it is. And what's with the what's his nickname again? Corbin's nickname, The Bull. I mean, is he supposed to like intimidate people? Like he sounds like a 1800 like explorer or something. I'm like Constable. Every time I hear that name, it makes me think of Cliff Huxtable. Constable. I mean, what is that? But anyway, I guess it's like a viceroy or something like that. I don't know, or it's commissioner. But I digress.
Corporate role.
Yeah. He's the new corporate Kane, basically.
Yeah.
And then you got Carmella defeating Asuka, as I suspected, because, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Asuka, was undefeated for 2 years up until WrestleMania, and she loses, and she hasn't won a big match ever since then, unless if you want to count her defeating James Ellsworth on SmackDown, a major victory. But, yeah, she hasn't won. It makes her look like a choke artist, you know.
They pretty much buried her character.
Yeah, they did the same thing with Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, but to his credit, he did defeat Jeff Hardy, you know, in heel mode. You know, he low blowed him before the match, and then of course did the Kinshasa surprise Kinshasa on Jeff Hardy, and Jeff Hardy's rumored to be like hurt in real life, and of course Randy Orton beat him up, which surprised everybody, and then of course he beat him up again on SmackDown. So Jeff Hardy is gonna have some time off, you know, to recover from his real life injuries. Mm-hmm. And as a result, Nakamura defeated Jeff Hardy for the WWE United States title, and of course Nakamura would subsequently defend the title on SmackDown. Then you have Kevin Owens defeating Braun Strowman by Braun Strowman basically literally throwing him out of the ring, you know. Which was the most surprising moment of the night, you know. So, you know, that was a great finish right there. Then you got the Bludgeon Brothers, Harper and Rowan defeating Team Hell No, you know, as I thought would happen, even though Team Hell No should have won, but, you know, WWE. So basically, you know, Team Hell No got beat up by the Bludgeon Brothers before, you know, earlier on in the pay-per-view, and then afterwards, you know, they lost, you know, the tag team title. I mean, the tag team title match for the SmackDown tag team title. So the Bludgeon Brothers retained the title. And then you have Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns. This was a very interesting match. You know, a lot more interesting thanks to the build-up that they've been having the past couple of weeks. You know, thanks to Paul Heyman, apparently, writing, producing, you know, this feud, you know. So that matchup, you know, was pretty good. Had a great finish, you know, had Bobby Lashley defeating Roman Reigns with the spear. And but what ruined this moment is that on Raw, instead of this was supposed to be for the number one contender, now they have this whole bogus triple threat matches for the next 2 weeks. To determine who's gonna face each other, I think on Monday Night Raw, which is gonna be a rematch of Extreme Rules. So for like 2 weeks, for the second time in 2 weeks, we have Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns because both guys respectively won their triple threat, you know, matches to qualify for this number one contender match, Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. Because, you know, yeah. Kurt Angle pressured Paul Heyman, at Raw to have Brock Lesnar defend the title. So
yeah, that's a bunch of bull. Lashley should be the one facing Lesnar. He
exactly.
should be the number one contender.
It hands down. I mean, like, if Bobby Lashley loses this number one opportunity, I mean, WWE is really out of touch. Like, super sanely out of touch. Like, people, I mean, Bobby Lashley is finally getting, you know, popular thanks to Roman Reigns. I mean, like it's like what Bray Wyatt said, anyone but you, Roman. You know, it's like anybody against Roman Reigns, it's like Cena, you know. That Cena, yeah. Like anybody against you, it don't matter if you're the biggest heel of the company. If you're really fighting against Roman Reigns or Cena, you're automatically a hero.
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
They better not botch this. They better put Lashley as the number one contender because this is the match people want to see. They want to see Bobby Lashley finally face Brock Lesnar and see what happens. Most likely Lesnar will win, but at least we'll have that dream match, and it'll be a title match. Give it to the fans, man. And then you got Alexa Bliss with the aid of Mickie James, her frenemy. Sometimes they're friends, sometimes they're enemies. Just like versus another former friend slash enemy, frenemy, Nia Jax, with the aid of Natalya and later on Ronda Rousey. Alexa Bliss would defeat her. No surprise there. Ronda Rousey got physical in the match, you know, interfered in the match. But all in all, Alexa Bliss defeats Nia Jax, a woman she has, an opponent that has like a two, like I don't know, she has a height advantage over her, you know, and a size advantage to her. This is like the anti-David versus Goliath matchup because you have the underdog as a villain and you have, you know, the more, you know, imposing character, you know, opponent as the villain, as the good guy, or in this case, the heroine.
Yeah.
So, no surprise there. AJ Styles defeat Rusev, even though, you know, we all thought it should have been Rusev Day, even though, you know, we all love AJ Styles and what he's done, you know, ever since he's been WWE, but, you know, it should have been Rusev Day, man. You know, obviously they had the whole Ada English botch up to, you know, save the embarrassment of Rusev losing, you know, cleanly, but, you know, it is what it is. What was I going to say? And, of course, Rusev lost his number one opportunity, so now they're going to look for another number one contender. Then, you know, then, of course, you have Dolph Ziggler with Drew McIntyre defeating Seth Rollins in a 30-man Intercontinental title match, you know, a 30-minute Iron Man match for the Intercontinental title. I don't know why I can't say it right now. But, yeah, and, I mean, you know, they're both great workers, but, I mean, WWE botched this for one reason. They shouldn't have made it a full hour because it's like all these legendary Intercontinental titles were an hour, and you want them to be measured up with the legends of the past. Why would you put it at half an hour? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that match was way too long.
You think it was way too long, even though it was at half an hour?
Yeah, I think it was way too long than it should have been. Yeah, I mean, it was still a good match, but it was a little long.
I think it's because they had too many matches. If they had lesser matches, like, who needed to see Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin? The Sienna, Almas, and Sin Cara, you need to see that match. If you had lesser matches and you just flush it out a little bit, it would have been better. I mean, because, you know, these pay-per-view events are, like, 5 hours long, you know. So I can understand that rationale. But, you know, all in all, you know, WWE, they dropped the ball. This pay-per-view could have been a lot better if Asuka won, if Rusev won. But, you know, it is what it is. So hopefully Survivor Series will be better. But quickly, congratulations to the French national team. They defeated Croatia, go 4-2, you know, 4-2. France won their first title since 1998, where they knocked out, you know, Croatia in the semifinals round. But, you know, congrats to them. And Mugabe, you know, he scored a goal in the World Cup final. For I think the first guy, like, since at that age, I think he's 19, since Pele in 59. So congratulations to him. Any last things you'd like to say quickly?
Check out my show here on Midnight and come back here to check out Sports of a Legend every Saturdays at 11.